I waited a while so that he wouldn't hear the bang which signalled the end of Badger, the end of the horses of Harland Grange, and the end of the sweet core of Cliff Tarman's life. As I was leaving, I saw the little man again. He was mounting the iron seat of a roaring tractor, and I shouted to him above the noise.
"The boss says he's going to get some sheep in, and you'll be doing a bit of shepherding. But I think you'll enjoy that."
Cliff's undefeated grin flashed out as he called back to me.
"Aye, I don't mind learning something new. I'm no but a lad yet."
Chapter 20. This was a different kind of ringing. I had gone to sleep as the great bells in the church tower down the street pealed for the Christmas midnight mass, but this was a sharper, shriller sound. It was difficult at first to shake off the mantle of unreality in which I had wrapped myself last night. Last night, Christmas Eve. It had been like a culmination of all the ideas I'd ever held about Christmas. A flowering of emotions I had never experienced before. It had been growing in me since the afternoon call to a tiny village, where the snow lay deep on the single street, and on the walls and on the ledges of the windows, where the lights on the tinsel trees glowed red and blue and gold. And as I left it in the dusk, I drove beneath the laden branches of a group of dark spruce, as motionless as though they had been sketched against the white background of the fields. And when I reached Darrowby, it was dark, and around the marketplace the little shops were bright with decorations, and the light from the windows fell in a soft yellow wash over the trodden snow of the cobbles. People, anonymously muffled, were hurrying about doing their last-minute shopping, their feet slithering over the rounded stones. I have known many Christmases in Scotland, but they had taken second place to the New Year celebrations. There had been none of this air of subdued excitement, which started days before with folks shouting good wishes and coloured lights winking on the lonely fellsides, and the farmers' wives plucking the fat geese, the feathers piled deep around their feet. And for fully 2 weeks you heard the children piping carols in the street, then knocking on the door for sixpences. And best of all, last night the Methodist choir had sung out, filling the night air with rich, thrilling harmony. Before going to bed, and just as the church bells began, I closed the door of Skeldale House behind me and walked again into the marketplace. Nothing stirred now in the white square, stretching smooth and cold and empty under the moon. And there was a Dickensian look about the ring of houses and shops put together long before anybody thought of town planning. Tall and short, fat and thin, squashed in crazily around the cobbles, their snow-burdened roofs jagged and uneven against the frosty sky. As I walked back, the snow crunching under my feet, the bells clanging, the sharp air tingling in my nostrils, the wonder and mystery of Christmas enveloped me in a great wave. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. The words became meaningful as never before, and I saw myself suddenly as a tiny particle in the scheme of things. Darrowby, the farmers, the animals, and I seemed, for the first time, like a warm, comfortable entity. I hadn't been drinking, but I almost floated up the stairs of Skeldale House to my bedroom. The temperature up there was about the same as in the street. It was always like that, and I developed the habit of hurling off my clothes and leaping into the bed before the freezing air could get at me. But tonight, my movements were leisurely, and when I finally crawled between the sheets, I was still wallowing in my Yuletide euphoria. There wouldn't be much work tomorrow. I'd have a long lie. Maybe till 9. And then a lazy day, a glorious hiatus in my busy life. As I drifted into sleep, it was as though I was surrounded by the smiling faces of my clients looking down at me with an all-embracing benevolence. And strangely, I fancied I could hear singing, sweet and haunting, just like the Methodist choir. God rest ye, merry gentlemen. But now there was this other bell which wouldn't stop. Must be the alarm, but as I pawed at the clock, the noise continued, and I saw that it was 6 o'clock. It was the phone, of course. I lifted the receiver. A metallic voice, crisp and very wide awake, jarred in my ear. "Is that the vet?"
"Yes, Harriet speaking," I mumbled.
"This is Brown, Willytail. I've got a cow down with milk fever. I want you here, quick."
Right," I'll see to it.
Don't take how long.
Then a click at the far end. I rolled onto my back and stared at the ceiling. So this was Christmas Day. The day when I was going to step out of the world for a spell and luxuriate in the seasonal spirit. I hadn't bargained for this fellow jerking me brutally back to reality, and not a word of regret or apology. No, sorry to get you out of bed or anything like that. Never mind Merry Christmas. It was just a bit hard. Mr. Brown was waiting for me in the darkness of the farmyard. I had been to his place a few times before, and as my headlights blazed on him, I was struck as always by his appearance of perfect physical fitness. He was a gingery man of about 40, with high cheekbones set in a sharp-featured, clear-skinned face. Red hair peeped from under a check cap, and a faint auburn down covered his cheeks, his neck, the backs of his hands. It made me feel a bit more sleepy just to look at him. He didn't say good morning, but nodded briefly, then jerked his head in the direction of the buyer.
"She's in there," was all he said.
He watched in silence as I gave the injections, and it wasn't until I was putting the empty bottles into my pocket that he spoke.
"Don't suppose I'll have to milk her today?"
"No," I replied. "Better leave the bag full."
"Anything special about feeding?"
"No, she can have anything she likes, when she wants it." Mr. Brown was very efficient. Always wanted to know every detail. As we crossed the yard, he halted suddenly and turned to face me. Could it be that he was going to ask me in for a nice hot cup of tea?
"You know,"
he said as I stood ankle-deep in the snow, the frosty air nipping at my ears,
"I've had a few of these cases lately. Maybe there's something wrong with my routine. Do you think I'm steaming up me cows too much?"
"It's quite possible." I hurried towards the car. One thing I wasn't going to do was deliver a lecture on animal husbandry at this moment. My hand was on the door handle when he said,
"I'll give you another ring if she's not up by dinner time. And there's one other thing. That was a hell of a bill I had from you fellas last month, so tell your boss not to be so savage with his pen."
Then he turned and walked quickly away towards the house.